Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today we're talking about how to defy disruption at work. In business, we have information coming at us a mile a minute. Some of it's useful, some of it not so much. At the same time, however, each of us and all of our employees have lives outside of work. Big things are happening, little things, old things are popping up, new things are occurring, but they're all things that we carry around with us and they make us who we are. But that can also interfere with productivity and general ability to be quote unquote present at work. Here today to provide insight into how employees can defy disruption at work and hone their focus is Dr. Amy Wood, a Maine-based psychologist who works with attorneys and senior executives to improve their well-being and make them more productive through coaching, training, and consulting. Welcome, Dr. Wood.
Thank you so much, Tani. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I am very excited for today's topic. In large part, I know that I can definitely use guidance and help about how I can decrease some of the disruption and distraction that are in my life. And I know that most people feel as though it never hurts to get some additional guidance and advice about improving their focus. So I really hope our listeners get as much out of this topic as the brief and initial conversations you and I have already had about this really useful topic.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Before we jump into kind of defying disruption, however, for our listeners who are unfamiliar with you, can you tell them a little bit about yourself, your practice, and the work that you do generally in this area?
Sure. I'm a psychologist. I'm based in Portland, Maine, and I've been in practice probably about 22 years. And I have developed an increasing specialty working with very high level and highly pressured professionals. I work with a lot of attorneys, as you know, and I work with a lot of C-suite executives from all different fields. And certainly, what we're talking about today, I would say, is relevant to all of those people. It's probably what they come in to talk about most, how distracted they are, and they want tips on how to focus.
I am happy to hear that it's not just me who is dealing with kind of some of these issues. And honestly, the more I was thinking about this, between our initial discussions and in preparing for today, I was thinking, gosh, think of all the ways in which distractions can occur, whether or not it's the dog barking next to you, the dog barking down the street, your watch alarm is going off, you're getting a text message, an Amber Alert is being sent out at 11 at night and you're receiving that information. I mean, whether or not we're seeking data or it's being pushed to us, we are definitely on the receiving end of data that sometimes is wanted and sometimes is unwanted.
That's right. Yeah, I was recently reading an article about, if you look at our ancestors, people that we wanted to be like extremely wealthy people. Like I'm talking about the Rockefellers, for example. And one of the privileges those people had in our minds was they had access to so much more information than we did. Yet, if we looked at that today, they would have access to a fraction of the information all of us are privy to today. So that really, when you think about it that way, shows us just how much we have coming at us all the time.
No, that is a really, really good point. I mean, so we've titled this show Defying Disruptions at Work. And when we talk about disruptions, generally, you and I have just talked about a couple of them, but what are some of the disruptions or distractions just generally that we're going to spend the next hour kind of digging in on?
Well, I think generally you have to start with the context in which we all function in our culture. And that context is one of constant change, change that's happening so fast that now change experts, so psychologists who study change and how we adjust to it, refer to it more as disruption because it never stops. It used to be, and I'm saying probably, up to about 10 years ago, we would look at the horizon and see a change ahead of us, and we'd get used to that. And then we would move into a new situation and we'd be clipping along and comfortable. And then we'd see another change on the horizon. But now there are really no horizons because everything is happening in many, many different ways. There's disruptions coming at us from inside of us. So one form of disruption could be thoughts that we're having about the past, about the future, worries that we have, regrets that we have, fears that we have, things we're looking forward to, things we're dreading, just minutiae going round and round in our heads, like, oh, I have to stop at the grocery store on the way home. There's those kinds of distractions. And then you've got the distractions surrounding us. So beyond that context I described, if you think about the fact that everybody has a phone, and the average American adult supposedly looks at their phone about 150 times a day. And of course, there are extremes and less than 150, but that's about what most people will do. And that in itself is a constant distraction. But then think about people trying to get your attention in other ways, like through email. Maybe you're working on a project and you're really in the zone, and all of a sudden you hear a ping, and then you think, oh, I should check that. And then you're distracted from your project. And typically it takes about, oh, 10 or 15 minutes to get back into what you were doing. So, we're in this constant cycle of being distracted and trying to get back into something. It's just all over.
I'm gonna jump in on one of the things that you just mentioned, and that's the, average individual looking at their phone 150 times, a day. And that's scary, but I'm sure that I am average or above average, and this is not a place where I'm excited to be above average. So when we're talking about technology and wrangling, I'm going to use wrangling technology. What are some of your thoughts on how we can work to restrict or limit the way in which technology disrupts us at work?
Well, we have to, wrangling's a good word. And, we really have to be in charge of our technology. For most of us, the technology drives us because we don't bother to put structures around it. Particularly in the hybrid world we live in, we're accessible when we're at home, we're accessible by anyone who wants to reach us from work, and vice versa. When we are, wherever we happen to be, anyone from any other part of our life can be in touch with us. And now that we're working sometimes in the same place that we're living, we have to be extra judicious about this. So it really takes looking back and being honest with yourself first about how much technology you're actually using, and then being extremely frank with yourself for the second part, which is asking, how much of this is really useful to me, and or how much of it brings me enjoyment. And anything less than being absolutely useful or absolutely enjoyable, you need to drop. And most of the time when I meet professionals for the first coaching session, I ask this question, and all of them say, I'm on my phone all the time, but I have to because of my responsibilities. I can't cut back. I'll ask them, are you ever on your technology for enjoyment? Oh, yeah, all the time. I like to surf the web. I like to scroll through social media, especially Instagram, and then I'll question them further, and they'll admit usually to me, you know what? I actually don't need to be on technology that often. And in fact, now that I think of it, those times when I'm scrolling through social media or just surfing the web mindlessly, those aren't really enjoyable times at all. And then they're willing to talk about how they can cut down. And that's where your power really comes in. When you feel like you can't get away from technology, you're in charge, you're the boss. And if you sit down and really think it through, you can find ways to be less involved with technology so that you can think more freely, have more time, have more space in your life.
No, I think that's a real, like, I love you're the boss. I love framing it in that way because I, at this point in time, I use my iPad for all my library books. So I rarely go to the library and take out a physical book, and I'll just do an ebook. And there's so many times that I get all settled in to do some reading, and I go and I hit another app, and I don't hit the reading app, and I do something else. And it's just, I feel like sometimes when you get that device in front of you, all your sense seems to just drain out of your
So
head for
true.
some reason.
Yeah, well, I think it's important to acknowledge that most of these gadgets we have are designed to addict us. And studies have been done to show that even if you really don't care, let's say about your phone, and you really don't feel the need to check it throughout the day, they do experiments to show that even those people will respond to a phone if a beep goes off when they're in their car driving, even if it's something never ever do and they don't believe they should ever look at their phone when they're driving. They do these experiments where they'll put the phone right next to the person in the passenger seat while they're driving, and they'll make it go off in some way, and the person always looks.
Gosh, for those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Dr. Amy Wood, a Maine-based psychologist who works with high-performing team members to improve their well-being and make them more productive. And today we're discussing how to defy disruption at work. We've talked a little bit about technology and how it plays a role in the work that we do, but then also how it relates to our personal life. You and I have spoken in the past, and one of the things that you mentioned is this concept of facing reality, and facing a truth that may be difficult to accept. When we're talking about facing reality, what does it mean from a defying disruption standpoint?
Well, when we think about what distracts us, as I mentioned, a lot of it is on the outside of us, technology, information coming at us, other people trying to get our attention. But as I also mentioned, a lot of it is on the inside. And when you think about what is running through your mind all day and the emotions flowing through you, a lot of that is about things that you have been avoiding, and you're putting energy into keeping those thoughts that may be distressing, or those emotions that may be distressing, at bay. So I can give you a few examples here. One is maybe you're denying a universal truth. So, I deal a lot with executives come in and they're really, really stressed out, and they'll say, "I'm just trying to get rid of stress." Or they'll come in and they'll say, "I really need life work balance and I can't achieve it. You need to help me." And I always say to them, these two things are impossible. As long as you're trying to outwit stress and eliminate it, you're going to fail and you are going to feel more stressed. And same thing when you look at work-life balance, it doesn't exist anymore. We have integration now between work and life. That's just a big blur because we're in a hybrid world. So when you carry around those goals, you're going to be distracted because those goals are not going to do you any favors, because you're never going to achieve them. So that's one way we can face reality, just acknowledging, for example, you know what? Stress is always going to be here. In fact, it's probably going to get worse as technology advances and we go faster and faster and faster with more and more disruption. So the better goal is to embrace the stress and have a different experience with it. The same thing with work-life balance. Instead of trying to achieve an impossible goal that's really a myth, ask, okay, how can I internally experience work and life differently so that I feel more structured and more in control of it? So that's one way that we can be less distracted internally by having reasonable goals that we think about. The other way is all of us, each and every one of us, we have things that we don't want to face that are unique to us. Like, let's say you've been having some problems in your relationship with a partner or your spouse, and you just don't want to go there. You're really busy. You don't want to face that maybe you need to go to therapy. So you just put it out of your mind. Or let's say you have a work situation you just don't want to deal with, but it's nagging at you. You got to deal with this. Or maybe it's a health situation where you're having symptoms that are a little scary to you and you don't want to go to the doctor because you're afraid of what you might hear. And we think that just suppressing all of this is a good way to be focused, but it takes energy to suppress distressing thoughts and distressing feelings. And it's much easier in the long run to just face these things and figure out how to deal with them, because then you can move on and put your energy into really being focused in better ways.
No, I think that those are all such important kind of concepts generally. And it's interesting kind of going back to, facing the reality of the myth of work-life balance. And there's this wonderful quote, and I'm going to slaughter it in some ways, but from Shonda Rhimes that talks about, you know, if I'm killing it while I'm producing a show, my kids are at home and someone else is giving them a bath, and I'm missing bath and story time while I'm killing it. And I have to be okay and accept the fact that, like, when I'm with them, I can be 100% present with them. But when I'm not with them, when I'm in my career, when I'm producing, writing, all those things, you know, that's what the focus is. And it's not a balance. And I had to face reality to acknowledge that.
Right. That's a perfect example.
You know, we're at a good place. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
To protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen! By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Dr. Amy Wood, a Maine-based psychologist who works with high-performing team members to improve their well-being and make them more productive. Today, we're discussing how to defy disruption at work and how both small and large changes in how you work can greatly impact your productivity. Before the break, we were talking about the effect technology has generally. I mean, with all the advantages and amazingness that technology brings, there's also the darker negative side of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a similar vein, as we talk about the balance, the good and the bad, work-life balance, and the fact that we're finally at this point where there's a larger acceptance that it just doesn't exist, that there is no work-life balance. When we have information that's coming at us a mile a minute, and it could be about like work-life balance, you can achieve it, you can't achieve it. Think of how many articles we see like about achieving this perfection, right? In a lot of situations, information's just being pushed at us, whether or not it's through ads, messages, general marketing. I mean, you're driving down the road and it's popping up, and we know that there's the technology out there now that billboards and signs are going to change their ad based off of the car you're driving or whatever information they can, data they can collect from you on the road. One of the things that you and I have talked about in the past is the importance of practicing sensible multitasking. But when we have everything coming at us like that,
What are your thoughts on how we can effectively achieve that?
Well, I'm glad you brought this up, Tani, because we were talking just a bit ago about myths that people aspire to that aren't possible. And one of those is multitasking. There are ways, I always say, to multitask sensibly, but you first have to know what's not sensible. And what's not sensible is the expectation that you can focus simultaneously on two activities that each require your full attention. So we've all been in situations where, let's say we're in a Zoom meeting and we're trying to look like we're focused and we're also checking our email, you know, or we're having a really, really important conversation on our phone and we're trying to watch a video and catch everything in the video. Or maybe you're at a dinner party and you're trying to listen to someone next to you, but you're also trying to listen to someone talking behind you. These things, they aren't possible. And yet we still strive to pay attention in this way. And all it does is really fracture our attention and lead us to make more mistakes. So the best thing to do, first of all, is drop that expectation that you're going to focus on these two important things at once. And then when you have to focus on something that's really important, make sure that you've shut down other sources of distraction. You know, we talk about everything coming at us as if we can't control any of that. And to an extent, we can't. You know, when we're driving down the road, no, we can't control the billboards in front of us. But we can turn off the radio if we want to, you know, and we can turn off the alerts on our phone if we choose to. We can shut down email when we're on a phone call. So again, it's about management of your technology, and then combining things that do work for multitasking. So let's say you're having a phone conversation with a friend from college, and it's really fun conversation. While you're doing that, you can fold laundry or do the dishes. You can probably pay attention to both. Or let's say you're waiting in line at a store. Maybe that's a time when you catch up on just basic texts. But I think the important thing to remember with multitasking is you never want to be doing two things at once if either of those things really is requiring you to be extremely attentive, and especially with someone's feelings, you know. So I have talked to attorneys about the importance when they're meeting with clients of having their phones off so they don't appear to be in a rush, so they can be 100% present.
No, it's a really good point. And during the course of us having this discussion, I mean, uh-huh. I have my phone on silent. I've turned my email off, mm-hmm. but my watch is attached to my phone. So suddenly, uh-huh. as you're talking about this, my wrist just starts ringing, and I'm like, and this is exactly what she's talking about right yes. now. Is, you know, right now everything's so connected that it's like my mind went to, well, who's calling? Don't look, because we're working on this.
Right.
But there's so many times, whether or not it's, you know, you hear that bing. And I love the example you gave about people who feel very strongly that we don't use our cell phones when we're driving. But when mm-hmm. they hear that ping, that they are going to turn their head. Or it's the same thing when you get lost and you turn the radio off.
Right.
And everyone's like, what's that going to help? But it's decreasing your distraction, as That's you right. just mentioned.
Yes.
You know, another disruption that you have talked about in some of the written materials that you've created kind of on this topic is this concept of baggage. And mm-hmm. I'm not talking about, you know, carry-on bags that we use in yeah. business travel, but that emotional weight that we all carry around. And when you and I first talked about this, I always looked at baggage as being a very personal thing that only affected my personal life. I mean, you can talk to my ex-husband, you can talk to past mm-hmm. boyfriends, they can tell you about my baggage, right? But I never really thought about like how it affects me from a professional standpoint. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you coach on is how that can adversely affect your professional performance. And I'd love mm-hmm. if you could spend a little time talking about that.
Sure. So, you know, I refer to baggage as anything that, like heavy bags that you carry around and have with you at the airport, baggage weighs on you. And this kind of personal baggage, it weighs on you in a psychological way that creates stress. It's a burden to you. And a perfect example that I see a lot is so many professionals trying to get out the door in the morning. They're rushing around, trying to get too much done, and they end up starting a conversation with their partner or their kids or someone they live with. And it's not an easy conversation. Maybe it's about something really important, but they're trying to rush through it and they end up in an argument. So what happens then is they get to work and they're overly stressed already. And they haven't even started their day because they started off on the wrong foot by getting in this conversation they didn't have time for. So that is a way that you can be impacted at work by something that happened at home. You can't just disconnect yourself emotionally from something like that. And it could be something bigger. You know, all of us, if we look back during the pandemic, there were things that were happening at home, especially because we were working at home, that really impacted us. Like it could have been something really serious, like maybe a sick elderly relative, or your kids were having trouble in school, or you were having trouble being home all the time. And I mean, endless things that we can be burdened by. But I'd say it's the bigger things that we don't take care of, you know, that I was mentioning before, like, you know, important problems that you're not addressing with your health or with your finances or with your personal life. You can't just switch that off when you walk into work. It's going to be with you and it's going to prevent you from being at your best.
You know, one of the concepts that's really, I think, taken off in the last couple of years is that concept or idea of authenticity and bringing your authentic self to work. And a lot of individuals and specialists will say, you know, the pandemic kind of pushed everyone to uncover or to be more authentic, kind of generally, because suddenly when we're doing meetings, we're inviting people into our home. And thankfully, we figured out how to use Zoom backgrounds and those type of things. But initially, when we had books piled up on our beds and we were sitting in a closet trying to find space to work that was private, when we're talking about baggage, how much do you find that people are now opening up at work, kind of being authentic and saying, I'm sorry, I just took out, you know, I just acted inappropriately, or I wasn't fair to you in that respect because of something else I'm dealing with. Let's restart. Are you seeing more and more leaders who are taking ownership of that and then moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one really good thing that has come out of the pandemic, that people want to be more human with each other at work. So studies that have been done recently on employees, you know, one thing that is constant, a general finding among employees is they want to have a boss that cares about them and wants to be in conversation with them about them as real people. So this is good because it used to be that the expectation was you are one person at home and another at work. Now, again, that is an impossible thing anymore nowadays because we don't have that indelible separation. But now the belief is, you know, we don't want you coming to work and talking about your problems all the time, but we want you to be yourself at work. So if you're stressed, you can go to your boss and say, you know what, I'm really stressed. And your boss can say, I have empathy for you. I know what it's like. And they can listen to you. That's really helpful when it comes to reducing stress. It's become something that leaders today are having to be extra good at to please people who want that at work now. So being able to listen, really engaging people, really caring about them again as individuals, knowing that, you know, of course, people are expected to do their job, but we also want to know what they're going through so that we can ask them, hey, how are things going with your husband who lost his job? Or how is your kid who wasn't doing well at school recently? Hope everything's okay. And especially in a hybrid environment, when you're dealing with people who aren't in the office as much, it's especially important to follow up on things and check in with people to keep them feeling cared about and engaged.
Yeah, I mean that concept of, you know, a whole person that we don't come to work as only our work self, but again, all that baggage. For those of you who are just joining us, our guest today is Dr. Amy Wood, a Maine-based psychologist who works with high-performing team members to improve their well-being and increase productivity. You know, another concept, Dr. Wood, that you write a lot about is clutter. And how decluttering can improve focus. And it's interesting because there are moments where I get anxious, where I start putting stuff off, and usually just throwing everything away, kind of something that makes me feel better. Now, whether or not that is the best solution, I'd love to hear your thoughts on like decluttering and what effect that truly does have on individuals. Because a lot of people say, I like to be in my little cocoon. I like to be surrounded by all of my things. It makes me feel secure. Does it just depend on the person?
I think it does, but in general, if you look back to what we were talking about earlier, when I said it's really important to distill down with your technology to what you absolutely need and what brings you joy, because the rest in the words we're using now, is simply clutter. And clutter is anything that you don't need or want around you that's taking your attention away from what you want to be focused on. And clutter adds up. So you may look around, let's say your workspace, and say, oh, well, I have a few papers over there and I have that empty coffee cup over there. And that's not really adding to clutter, but all of it together, it is distracting you. So, you know, some people do say, oh, I work really well in a mess, but not many of us do. And I think as we get older, we're less tolerant. I think that, you know, younger people can work in messiness more than adults can. So what I like to do, you know, when I'm overwhelmed, and anyone can try this, anyone listening, is I get a blank piece of paper and I just set my timer for 2 minutes and I write at the top of the piece of paper what I need to get rid of to feel more focused. And I just jot everything down, and it could be I need to clean off my desk. I need to go do the dishes. I need to go run that errand, have a clear head. I need to return that email, you know, whatever it is I need to do to be able to focus on the work at hand. And so when I say clutter, you know, you're hearing me mention more than just stuff here. So clutter could be anything from actual things, you know, let's say that like me, every now and then you're very wishful and you subscribe to the New Yorker. And then it just piles up because you don't have time to read it. It's, you know, not until I'm retired will I have time to read a full New Yorker. So it just creates guilt for me, even though I would love to read it, I can't. And so as it gets piled up, I think, oh, what's wrong with me? I don't have the time to read. I really do need to get through those issues. And then I'm wasting all this money. Finally, what I always do is I just get rid of it and I cancel the subscription because it's not realistic to have it. So think about anything in your life that's like that. And it could be, you know, an email that you're on and you get a newsletter once a month and you don't have time to read it. So just unsubscribe. Or it could be obligations in your life. You know, maybe you decided to sit on a committee a year ago that you were really passionate about. And now you dread going to the meetings because you've lost interest. Or you have lunch once a month with a friend and you're finding once a month is too much. You know, things are changing so much for us that what once was very valuable in our life and necessary now is clutter. The beauty of the world we live in is we're constantly able to switch things up. You know, we're constantly able to find new things to get excited about, but we don't want the old to build up. So it's kind of like weeding your garden. You know, you've got to be looking for, you know, what weeds you need to pull in a clutter kind of way. And what we know when I say that about psychologists is when psychologists, if you get rid of the clutter, that sense of spaciousness that you have from moving out of your environment, things that you don't really want to be paying attention to or getting out of your head, goals that you don't really want to accomplish anymore. You have a sense of being liberated and you're more at peace with everything and you can focus way more and do much better work because you're bringing more of yourself to work. You're less blocked by all the clutter.
You know, it's interesting because your story about the New Yorker, I definitely have some subscriptions and you'll laugh because I actually take it one step further. So I have that like, you're going to read this. And then I pick up the magazine and I will actually pull out any pages that are just ads. So it seems like it's a smaller amount for me to read. And I'm like, look at you just recycled 10 pages. It still doesn't get me any further to consuming the information that I want to consume. But somehow in my mind, I'm like, you're one step closer, even though I really just took up however many minutes pulling out ads from a magazine.
Yeah, a lot of us play those tricks on ourselves.
We're going to take another quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, the Healthcare Purchase Alliance, Paper Trails, and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetti.
And I'm Pete McVetti from McVetti's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay. There's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetti's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMA Career.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Dr. Amy Wood, a Maine-based psychologist who works with high-performing team members to improve their well-being and assist them in becoming more productive. We've spent today talking about how to defy disruption at work and how small and large changes in how you work, and not just how you work, but how you live as well, can greatly impact your productivity. We've talked about being our authentic self and our whole self and bringing that person to work, and that there's going to be situations where we don't mean to, but the baggage that we have is coming with us, whether or not we want it to come with us or not. Mm-hmm. You know, the baggage then leads to more reality facing. And we talked about reality facing, but there's also this concept that you write about concerning taking care of petty annoyances.
Yes.
And when we think about petty annoyances versus facing reality, how are they different? Are they different concepts? Are they one and the same?
Well, I'd say they're one and the same in terms of how they all build up in our heads. But the difference between baggage and these petty annoyances, I would call, you know, the baggage is more like important stuff in your life that needs to be addressed, like issues that you have. Where petty annoyances, it's more like errands and just stupid little things that you say, well, that can't really be creating stress for me. It's just that little thing. Like maybe you have a package in your backseat in your car that really needs to be taken to the post office, but there's no hurry. So it just sits there and you don't realize that every time you get in the car and glimpse that package, it's causing you stress. And it could be as simple as I need to call this person back. It's not in anything really that important, but you do owe someone a return call. That's weighing on you. To, or something that you haven't put away in your house. It could be, you know, I have not hung up that coat. It's still on the chair. You know, that small thing, when you take that and add it to all those other small things, there's stress for you. So
you said that and everyone's thinking about the pile of laundry in their guest room. I promise you, two-thirds of our listeners are thinking about either the laundry that's still in the dryer or that is randomly placed somewhere else in their home right now.
Yes. Yeah. And just doing one of those things, like checking one little thing off, it could be, let's say you need to get your oil changed in your car and you think it's not going to make a big deal to do it. So I should work on something much bigger. But I promise you, if you get that oil change done, you're going to feel a real sense of relief, a palpable sense of relief that will allow you more energy to get the bigger things accomplished.
So when we're talking about some of these, whether they're petty annoyances, whether they're baggage, you know, we have been talking about both work things and home things, but we've also had a discussion about hybrid work and the fact that in a lot of ways, individuals who are working remotely or working in place, that they've lost that line between home time and work times. you know, we've talked about a number of these concepts, but if we have listeners who are saying, how can I assist team members or even myself in redrawing that line? Mm-hmm. What does that look like as we talk about some of these concepts that you've already mentioned that can be disruptors?
Well, drawing a line is a good way to put it, because I think when it comes to creating focus in your own life, especially with your work, you have to do what feels right to you. And let me give you an example of that. You know, some of us are morning people, some of us are afternoon people, some of us are night people. And whenever your energy is at its highest, like if you're a morning person or you're a night person, that's when you should be doing your high level work. So organizing your time and your structures around that at work. So if you're a morning person, maybe, and you go into work, you know, whether it's at home or an actual office building, maybe you say from 9 to 11 every morning, I am do not disturb on my calendar, because that's when I'm getting my high level work done and I can't afford to be distracted. Whereas you might say, you know, from 3 to 4 every day, that's when you do easy work that doesn't require a lot of thought. Or that's when you say, I return phone calls and texts and emails. And the beauty of that, you know, when you tell people what your schedule is like that, you're not always accessible and being interrupted, but people get to know, let's say Tawny is free to pick up her phone and get back to me every afternoon between 1 and 2, then they get to know that. And so they'll use that time proactively to reach you. So it's a matter of asking yourself, to the degree that you have freedom, how do you want to design your workday? How do you want to design your office space, the use of your technology within that space, so that you can focus for long periods of time?
You know, and it's interesting, because I'm sure we have some listeners who are saying, but my job is just to be available. My job is to be available to other people. And we've had some past guests and some recent guests. We've talked about 4-day work weeks, and we've talked about building in sabbaticals for succession planning. You know, recently we've had a number of guests on the show that have talked about how, I don't want to say you train the people around you to understand, but that, you know, once a culture is created where it is a 4-day work week and none of us work on Friday and nobody expects the other person to be available on Friday, you know, I think in part when we're talking about authenticity, but also talking about maintaining healthy lifestyles, and I, you know, I almost slipped and said work-life balance, but really healthy lifestyles, that putting up parameters and drawing those lines is going to be necessary for us to achieve kind of what you're discussing.
Yes. And it may be new for some people, you know, like working with a lot of attorneys where they feel they must be accessible 24 hours a day. And their fear is that they'll lose the business if they don't answer the phone at night to help out a client. And what they see when they start working with me is that when they do set these boundaries, when they say to their clients up front, you know, I'm not available after 5, or I won't return your call probably for 24 hours. At first, maybe people will get upset if you've been too accessible in the past, but then they actually like it because they know your availability.
You've talked a little bit about dropping commitments that maybe no longer serve the individual, whether or not it's lunch dates, whether or not it's a board activity or something along those lines. You know, how do you help people determine whether or not it's serving them? Is it just like, is it helping with whether or not it's business development or business relationships, or does it feed their soul? And how do you help people kind of identify, is the commitment still serving you?
I think, especially when you're talking about work commitments, it's really about where you are in your career. So if you think back to what you were doing, let's say in law school, you know, to build a really impressive resume, you were probably doing things that you weren't incredibly passionate about, but you really needed to get the experience. And as we get more work experience, we get to choose more what we want to be doing. So, you know, somebody who's in their early 20s, really trying to climb the ladder and is out there on the fast track, they're probably going to be doing more things that they think they should be doing. Whereas, let's say someone who has been in the business for a while and they're in their 50s and they're starting to wind down a bit, they're probably going to be looking more for things that they really enjoy because they have already done all that resume building.
No, and it's interesting. And there's always a concept that someone shared with me recently, kind of in a similar vein, but using this anchor analogy, right? Like mm-hmm. what anchored me before? It was that drive to success. It was to achieve whatever whatever title it was that I was going after, whether it was to be best and the brightest or to have X, Y, and Z title in that period of time. And then once that's achieved, you've kind of lost that anchor. Well, wait a second, right. I've achieved it. What's next? And kind of the work that a person needs to take internally to determine what their new anchor is, what's right. going to drive them moving forward.
Right.
You know, when we talk about either what serves us and then dropping commitments that no longer serve us, I'm sure that we have some listeners who are saying, nope, I could never, I don't say no. I never say no mm-hmm. because you never know how that opportunity is going to progress. And not just that, but when I say no, I just feel guilt. Mm-hmm. Do you have thoughts or comments for people who are taking those guilt feelings and saying, I always say yes, because I'd rather say yes and be overwhelmed than deal with the guilt?
Yes. Well, I always look at it like if you're saying no, because it's something you really don't want to do and you're just not into it, or you just don't have the wherewithal or the bandwidth to do it, you're helping other people with their goals. You know, so if you're saying no and delegating work, let's say to someone who has less experience than you do, you're giving them an opportunity. And when you're saying no to work and saying, I trust you can do this, you're showing people that you have confidence in them and you don't need to be controlling everything. So instead of looking at saying no, the way that a lot of people look at it, which is I'm hurting someone's feelings or I'm being lazy by not doing the work, look at it like I'm collaborating, I'm allowing other people opportunity to get experience and to grow and to be more confident in themselves.
No, I love that. I love that concept. And it takes it kind of off of you and gives this experience to someone else. I think that's really mm-hmm. helpful. Is that time again for another break? You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPower.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Dr. Amy Wood, a Maine-based psychologist who works with high-performing team members to improve their well-being and help to make them more productive. Today, we've been discussing how to defy disruption at work and how both small and large changes in how we work and how we live can greatly impact our productivity. Dr. Wood, I mean, We've been talking now for a little over 40 minutes, and we have team members and listeners who are saying, gosh, this is all great, Tawny, and I have a lot of really important information. Mm-hmm. Now I don't know where to start because I feel like I have information overload. I don't want to say I'm more, mm-hmm. more distracted by how much information I have, but where do I start?
I think the answer to that is to start with the tiniest step you can think of, because we tend to create more stress for ourselves and other forms of distraction by having goals that are way too big and unwieldy. And we expect to accomplish things in one big step, which can be very intimidating. So a good idea for our listeners, we've talked about a lot of ways we can become distracted. If you think about the environments that you function in most, and for most people I talk to, that's your home, a workspace, whether it's in your home or in a building or both, and your car. And ask yourself today, as we end, what's one tiny little thing I can do to be more focused in one of those environments? And it could be, you know, at home, maybe I'm just going to pick up my living room a little bit and get it more organized, you know, set a timer for 10 minutes and pick up whatever I can. Or it might be when I'm in the car tonight, I'm just not going to have anything on. I'm not going to be listening to anything so that I can just wind down on my way home from work. Or maybe, and you know, another great thing that you can do to be more focused is take a look around your living room. I mean, your bedroom, and ask, you know, how could my bedroom be more of a refuge where I can sleep really well? Because of course, good sleep leads to better focus. And that could be, I'm just going to make sure I don't have my phone with me at night when I'm in my bedroom.
I have these great plans every year. Uh-huh. I say, nope, the phone doesn't come in the bedroom, and day two, and it's right back there. And I even have bought I don't want to say old fashioned, I've bought the alarm clock so that I'm not using, mm-hmm. and it still always just comes back to that phone alarm.
Yeah, it's amazing how the phone can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just one little thing, you know, and if it's your work, you know, it could be, I'm just going to shut the door, you know, right now, or I'm just going to open a window and get some fresh air in here. That'll help me focus. So just tiny little tweaks. Start with that.
No, I really appreciate that. I mean, Dr. Wood, if we have listeners who would be interested in collaborating with you more and talking to you kind of on a private level, not in a like, hey, let me just call and get your advice, but in a patient client perspective, you know, well, how can they contact you, and how can they connect?
Well, people can go to my website, and that's amywoodpsyd.com. You can follow me on Instagram at amywoodpsyd. And certainly people can call me anytime with questions or concerns. And my number in Maine is 207-232-0390.
Gosh. Dr. Wood, thank you so much for your insight concerning this really helpful topic. I mean, I'm also going to direct people. You have a number of really wonderful written materials that are both on your website, and then I just found you in another journal that I read. And this is a journal that I actually do read, not the ones that I that I rip the ads out of. Uh-huh. So thank you kind of for adding generally to this topic. And I appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me.
And you've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.